This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. What do you think of when you think of high school? Playing hooky like in Ferris Bueller's Day Off? A stoned Jeff facing off against the uptight Mr. Hand in Fast Times at Ridgemont High? Cher Horowitz adopting the tragically unhip Ty in Clueless? They're all iconic movie images of high school, but reality tends to be a little rougher than fiction. The reality might align more with this voicemail that we got from a listener in South Carolina.
I think the biggest misconception about high school these days is that the teenagers are coddled and carefree. I have to say my nieces, as well as my son, when he was in high school, all worked almost full-time and paid for a lot of their fees and books, etc., and were under tons and tons of pressure. And I have to say, at 66, I was very unhappy in high school. Just because I was an all-girls school and I worked full-time and there were too many kids in the family and not enough money to go around. So I have to say high school is very hard. It was very hard and it still is very hard.
Thanks very much for sharing your story with us. We welcome more of your questions and stories as our conversation continues. So email us, 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Because today, we're going to get a sense of high school in America from the experts. High schoolers. It's the first conversation in our week-long series, which we're calling Enrolled. We're diving into some of the biggest issues facing education in the U.S., including the role of technology in classrooms, the cost of college, and school safety. Joining us here in studio is Michael Solomon, a rising junior at Springbrook High School in Montgomery County, Maryland, which is near D.C. He's the editor-in-chief of his school's newspaper, and he was involved in D.C.'s March for Our Lives rally earlier this year. Michael, welcome to 1A.
It's great to be here.
Joining us from WBEZ in Chicago is Miracle Burris, a rising junior at Gary Comer College Preparatory School. She's on the majorette team, and she's already started visiting colleges. Miracle, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
And Dana Youngberg is a rising senior at Newell High School in Newell, South Dakota. She plays volleyball and baseball, she runs track, and she's in the National Honor Society. She drove more than an hour to join us from KBHE Public Radio in Rapid City, South Dakota. Dana, thank you so much for making that drive, and welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Michael Solomon, let me start with you. I know it's summer vacation right now, but walk me through what a typical school day was like for you last year. What was an average day like, if there was such a thing?
Well, typically consists of waking up, getting to school, sometimes picking up breakfast from the cafeteria, and then, of course, going through the school day. Lunch isn't always a break for a lot of students. For me, especially, I'd be catching up on work, studying for a test, or just working on outside projects that I might have. And then after school is, at least for the fall part of the school year, it's always soccer. So I don't even get home until like 6:30 to 7, most on a regular school day.
You get home 6:30 to 7. What time are you usually leaving? Leaving to get to school.
Oh, leaving to get to school at about 7 in the morning.
So you have like a 12-hour day.
Pretty much, yeah.
You work more hours than I work some days, just going to school.
Yeah.
Do you have any kind of like extracurricular time or non-focused, non-goal-driven time?
I mean, the Sundays are pretty relaxed. But yeah, I mean, it depends on how much you involve yourself in. But for the most part, school is pretty demanding.
Miracle Burris, what about you? Same question. Talk to me about an average school day for you.
Average school day for me would be waking up like 5 o'clock in the morning, getting ready to go to school. Now they changed it. It used to be like we had to be there at 7:45 in the morning. Now we have to be there at 8. And so I would be there. I would go through my school day. We'll have lunch, which I, like he said, I do my homework at lunch. I catch up on anything. I study because we might have a test in a couple hours. And so I just do that. And then after that, I have majorette practice, and then I have to go to work, and then I don't get home till like maybe 8, 9 o'clock.
What's your trip to school like? You're in the south side of Chicago, is that right?
Yes.
What's your commute to and from school like?
My mom drives me.
Okay. Michael, what about you? What's your trip to school like?
Yeah, well, either my mom or my dad will drive me.
Danny Youngberg, what about you? What is your average day at school like?
Well, get up in the morning, do chores, head to school about 7:30. Get there, go through my normal day, lunch, generally maybe eat at the school, being that we're such a small school, like, we can go off campus, go to the gas station. Seniors can drive off campus, but not. Lunch is generally like a break for all of us. And then we have our last three periods. We're done at about 3:45, and then we do whatever sports practice we have that night.
How many nights do you have sports practice usually, Dana?
Four nights a week.
How early do you have to get up to get chores done? It sounds like you are getting to school around the same time as Michael and Miracle, but how early do you have to get up to get your chores done?
I'm generally up about 5:30.
You know you're up earlier than me. You know that, right?
Yeah.
I used to be up earlier, and now you get to sleep later as a grown-up. It's one of the wonderful things of making it. I want to play a voicemail from a listener that echoes some of what we heard from that first listener we heard in the beginning of the program, and I'd like to get your take on it. All three of you have stories that might be reflected in this voicemail that came to our inbox.
I work with teenagers, and what I've found is that they seem to be so driven nowadays. There's so little time just to be a teenager. They all are trying to build their resumes. They're in extracurriculars. They have a job. They're trying to get the best grades. And they're not sleeping much. And they all just seem exhausted. And I find that very different than when I went to high school in the 80s.
Yeah, thanks very much for sharing that with us through our app 1A Vox Pop. That reflects a real concern that several of you expressed about kids just being overscheduled. Patrick tweeted, "Too much pressure on kids. We are all racing against China and India to make our kids smarter, and they are missing out on the fun things." Minori asks, "Do you think that too much stress is placed on high schoolers to achieve highly? In what manner does this stress affect their daily lives?" Michael, what do you think about that?
I would agree that there's a lot of stress placed on high schoolers, like on a day-to-day basis, and I'd probably agree that it's a lot more than in previous generations. I think that it can have negative effects, and it probably contributes to a lot of the like increase in depression that we see in young people. Just that extra stress that kids my age, not all of us are equipped to deal with that. Not all of us have the outside resources to help deal with that. But it also is a good thing in some ways because it encourages kids to be involved and be engaged and like explore new paths, explore passions, or even just prepare themselves for higher learning, for higher education in college and universities. So, yeah, I feel like it definitely has negative effects on the health of teens and things like that.
Miracle Burris, I wonder what your take is on that, particularly what Michael mentioned in terms of having the resources to deal with that stress and to learn how to manage it. Does that resonate for you?
Yes, I do believe it is very stressful, but I believe it is also very helpful in a way because it's preparing us for real life. And so the fact that we have the schedule that we do, we have work, we have practice, it's basically taking on that we're encountering fun, work, and still being serious and making sure that we keep our knowledge up in a way that will help us in the future. So yes, it is stressful, but it's going to help us in the long run to where we don't have to be as stressed as we are now.
Dana?
I would have to agree, honestly. Working through stressful situations, especially like on a farm and whatnot, like you're always put in certain situations all the time. So I think learning to deal with a lot of that stuff is helpful. And as far as school goes, I mean, everybody's parents wants the best for them, I guess, especially mine. Like they don't want me to go through what they had to. So, I don't know, just putting their children before them.
We are speaking to Dana Youngberg of Newell High School in Newell, South Dakota, Miracle Burris of Gary Comer College Prep in Chicago, and Michael Solomon of Springbrook High in Montgomery County, Maryland, near D.C. We welcome your questions and thoughts about what high school is like today or about what high school has been like for you. If you are a high schooler, we want to put your comment to the top of the list. We want to hear from you what you wish more people understood about what the high school experience is like. Some of you have shared your experiences about how high school was for you. Stacy tweeted, "I moved 14 times and had 4 high schools moving mid-year. It is incredible to me how disjointed various curricula are. Our country is mobile and we need a national education system for public schools. States' rights doesn't work for education. I hated high school." got quite a few voicemails, including this one from a listener in Colorado. Listen.
My name is Ricardo, and I'm calling from Fort Collins, Colorado. And as a parent of a high schooler, my question to high schoolers is, what do you wish you were learning in class that you are not learning right now that would prepare you for life after high school? What kind of skills do you think would make you better prepared for when you graduate and you have to face the world?
Ricardo, thanks for that. Clearly some concerns about the quality of what you're getting in the classroom. I know we got to pause in a minute, but Miracle, could you take a crack at that? What do you wish you were getting in class that you're either not getting or not getting enough of?
Well, at my school, all we do is learn the basics, so reading, math, science, and English. So we don't really get that outside feel of, like, medicine or music. We don't really have that till the end of the day, and most of our sports are just regular sports. And so I feel like high school should be a mini college in a better way, in the fact that college actually teaches you what you want to be in the future. So I wish we had some type of system where we could just maybe visit a hospital one day or go to a fashion studio or something.
That's a great idea, this idea of being kind of mini college. I want to get the rest of your takes on this when we continue with Miracle Burris, Dana Youngberg, and Michael Solomon. We're letting our panelists DJ today's show. Dana chose our first music break. It's Take Me Home Country Road by John Denver. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you as we begin our education week. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
The drops in my eyes, country road, take me home to the place I belong.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're beginning our special week on education with something we like to call Ask a High Schooler with Michael Solomon, a rising junior at Springbrook High in Montgomery County, Maryland, rising senior Dana Youngberg of Newell High in Newell, South Dakota, and rising junior Miracle Burris of Gary Comer Prep in Chicago. We welcome your questions for these high schoolers about the high school experience today, and I should say their high school experiences today. These three cannot speak for all high schoolers, but we would like to give them a chance to speak for themselves. So share your questions with us. And if you are a high schooler, share your thoughts about what high school's like today, what you wish more people knew or thought about when they think about high school in 2018. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Quite a few of you resonated with the comments about being so super busy. Mike tweeted, I had to wake up at 5 in the morning and take an hour and a half bus ride to get to school by 7:30 in the morning. Didn't get home until 8 p.m. most days after all my responsibilities. Long time ago, but it created habits that were hard to break, like eating fast and walking fast. Will tweeted, my daughter just graduated, and between her home life and 4 years of band and early college and living on a farm, I think she missed her teenage years altogether. Michael Solomon, why don't you take a crack at Ricardo's question? What do you wish you were learning in class that you're not learning that might prepare you for life after high school?
Well, one thing that I think I've observed about our education systems, not just in Montgomery County, but it's evident in other places in the country, is our education systems seem to fail to realize that not all high school students are planning on going to four-year universities or colleges, and they're not providing adequate resources to those schools to better prepare those students to go into other paths after high school. For example, we don't have adequate classes for financial responsibility and how to deal with money, how to deal with banks and credit cards, and some students are going to go straight into careers, straight into employment right after high school, but all they're learning about is calculus or English and reading 1984. And that's why I feel like another thing that's really important that needs to be more emphasized in high school systems is vocational schools. In Montgomery County, we have one vocational schools that is supposed to fit over 85,000 high school students. Out of 85,000 high school students, there's 26 total high schools in Montgomery County. We only have one vocational school. So we only have one building that would be able to provide resources to only a few out of 85,000 students.
Skip tweeted, I graduated in 2005. I wish they would have had budgeting, money management, taxes, useful life skills. Things like trigonometry and calculus are useful really for only certain career choices, so don't subject kids to these. Have life skills classes, home economics, cooking, child development, home repairs. Danny Youngberg, is it a little different out where you are being in a more rural area? And I understand that, you are interested in working in agriculture after high school. Do you find it's a little easier there to find more career-driven classes just because of the region you're in? Or do you find a similar problem to what Michael just described?
It's actually a little bit of both, honestly. Like, agriculture is kind of big out here, so it's a lot easier to get a job in like the agricultural like state of things. But there are a lot of other opportunities too, especially like with financial stuff too. Like, I wish that's something that they would go over with us, scholarships. Being that I'm going to graduate this next spring, I haven't had much of an opportunity to like look at scholarships or have financial aids and whatnot. Like, that's a little more difficult.
Yeah, and I just, you know, as someone who has been through high school, can I just advise all three of you to just nag if they don't give you that information? Just nag them. Just bite them in the ankle and chase them in the guidance office if you have to, because that will make adulthood a lot easier. I'm not going to tell you my whole story because it's too sad. By the way, Dana, I forgot to ask, do you know what you want to do when you graduate? Like, what's your plan?
Well, I'm not 100% sure where I want to go to college, but I want to be an embryologist in cattle. That's where you basically take an embryo from one cow and you put it in another cow, and the cow will raise this embryo up into a calf, and then she'll have it. So she's basically like a donor mother.
Miracle, what about you? What do you want to do after high school?
Well, as of right now, I want to be in the entertainment business, and so I do want to be a YouTuber, and I do want to be an actor, and I've always wanted to be a model, but I've also wanted to be a pathologist, and because I'm just interested in the human body and what it does after it dies and how things work, and I like to solve mysteries, too, so...
I'm seeing you as a YouTuber who does like true crime stuff as a professional pathologist.
Yes.
I'm telling you, as many years as CSI and Law and Order have been on the air, you'll be the number one YouTube channel on the web. I think you can make that happen. Michael, what about you? What do you want to do after high school?
I'm not sure what I want to study in college, but I definitely want to go to law school and potentially pursue a career in the legal field or maybe even policy.
Audrey tweeted, I graduated just this year. I attended a Montgomery County high school and found that there was an overwhelming pressure to take honors and AP classes, advanced placement classes, as early as possible. I also found myself waking up at 5 a.m. some days while going to sleep at 11. Erica Zambello tweeted, I graduated from a good high school in Maine. 10 years later, I still can't change a tire or my oil. I can't sew or mend. Learning to do taxes and choose an insurance plan was painful. I wish life skills had been a class. Hannah wants to know, after Trump was elected, were students and teachers more or less inclined to discuss politics at school? Miracle, let me put that question to you. How much, if at all, do students and teachers talk politics at your school?
Well, the day that the announcement of Trump being elected, it was a crucial day for my school. We went like on a whole lockdown. It was like a Trump day for us. And so we were in the classrooms just watching all his videos and sitting there. Our teachers were crying. We basically did no work the whole day. And so his election was a big impact on my school. So now they like to put a lot of what he's doing now in our learning and try to teach us like banning immigrants or banning any Latinos from the U.S. is not a good thing. And so we either learn that or we include the LGBTQ community into this section, like where most of our teachers are a part of that community. So they either come in and they talk to us about some situations that they're dealing with, or we just go over a whole lesson on it. So it was a very negative impact on our school, and we did not take it well, but I feel like it's helping us learn more about life now, and we're growing as a school.
Dana Youngberg, I understand that the county you live in, President Trump won with 73% of the vote. So I'm guessing the conversations have been different than they were at Miracle School in Chicago. But do you find that your school talks politics at all, or is that mostly just kind of kept outside of the classroom?
Well, I can honestly say when the election was going on, like before Trump was even elected, we had a lot of like class debates and like the good and bad with Trump and everybody who was running. But since Trump got elected, we talk about it a little bit, but I mean, we try to not, like, we try to keep the politics to a minimum. I guess if we talk a lot more about like the school shootings and like the gun control and whatnot, we talk a lot about that, like what we would do as a small school to like prevent it, or like the protocols and whatnot to go through with that.
What are some of the things that you hear at your school in terms of what to do if something like that should happen?
Taking action, like as a teachers, like what the teachers would do, what the teachers' plans were, what us as students needed to do, if we needed to help, what we would do if we got put in a situation like that. Just trying to get away, trying to fight back, trying to save other people.
It's interesting that you brought up school shootings. We did get a number of questions from folks about safety on campus. Here's another question that came into our inbox.
My name is Lindsay. I'm calling from Longmont, Colorado, and I want to know whether high schoolers today experience fear and anxiety around school shootings, and what they think should be done to address the school shooting issue, you know, besides sort of the typical talking points that we hear.
Lindsay, thanks for that question. Michael, you've been involved with the March for Our Lives movement, so why don't you take that question first?
Sure. Definitely especially after Parkland, I know there was a lot of fear and anxiety after the Las Vegas shooting that happened in October, but after Parkland, I feel like this entire issue of gun violence, not just school shootings, became centralized around young people, especially with the activists that came out of Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. I've definitely seen it become a hot topic, especially in the months that followed after the shooting happened. I've definitely seen people, I mean, my newspaper had covered at least 3 different stories about school security in Montgomery County and how our school, Springbrook, was trying to better equip itself for events like that in the future. But one thing that I feel is important to keep in mind, and something, a sentiment that I feel that a lot of students agree with, is that we shouldn't have to turn our schools into like basically prisons with metal detectors and ID badges to the point where these are like federal government agencies, where to the point where we are turning our schools into the prisons in order to avoid taking guns away from people who shouldn't have them. And I think the real issue is when people who shouldn't have guns have weapons of mass destruction. That's the issue.
Miracle, you are on the south side of Chicago. We hear a lot about gun violence in Chicago, so I'd love you to take a crack at this. But also another question another comment that came in from Peter. Peter wrote, "The activists at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, are impressive. Are there smart and engaged students in your school? Are they the exception? We get the impression that kids today can't make change and only interact electronically. This can't be true." Miracle, what do you think?
Well, school shootings for us isn't really a problem. It's more of what we're surrounded by, so like the area we're in. And so like my school is near Pocket Town, which is high on gun violence, and so it's harder. It was harder to be around there when I was like in sixth grade, but now the area has gotten a lot better, so I wouldn't say it's a big problem for us right now, but we do try to support the movements and try to take action. We haven't actually had a conversation about, you know, putting up metal detectors and having security guards, but we have had some, like, our police district, like, outside of our school and around the corner when we get out of school or when we transition, so that can make it a safer environment. So we do take action. I wouldn't say students, we're always in our phones and like we never like pay attention to what's going on around us.
Right.
We are very aware, and we actually bring it up in many subjects in our school. So that isn't really a problem. But I would just say if maybe the world would give us a chance to speak more freely, then change will probably happen.
Michael?
Yeah, so definitely, I guess in response to that question, one thing that I have seen through my involvement with the March for Our Lives movement and the relationships that I've built with the kids from Stoneman Douglas, this summer they had just yesterday, they finished their Road to Change tour, which was basically them going to different communities, different cities all across the country, meeting with students, meeting with communities, and engaging them, registering people to vote. And what I've seen on the few stops of the tour that I was able to participate in, I have seen students from all over the country being just as engaged, just as involved, just as eager to make change as those students from Parkland were. And I feel as though through my involvement with this movement, I have seen a consistency of eagerness to make change with all young people. I think this past year, maybe it was the election of President Trump, or maybe it was the mass shootings that keep on happening. People who are my age are continuing to be more engaged and more involved.
It's so amazing to me that the engagement that happened after the tragedy in Parkland was almost facilitated by technology. Like these young people looking down at their phones, they may not have been distracted. They may have been engaged. Like that was the way that they made this movement happen. However, we should acknowledge that young people are not always looking at their smartphones to change the world. And that came up in a lot of questions we got from our listeners, including this one in our inbox.
Hi, my name is Joel Darden, and I'm a history teacher from Greensboro, North Carolina. I would like to ask high schoolers why they are so unwilling to put away their phones during class. I have faced many issues as a teacher in trying to keep students on task and not be so distracted by their phones, but to no avail.
Joel, thanks for the question. Dana, why don't you take this one on? How does your school deal with smartphones or phones in class?
Well, I guess if we get caught with them, the teacher just takes them away for either the class hour or for the day. But I really think everybody just kind of gets sick and tired of school, or they don't want to stay engaged in school. They'd rather go do something fun, like go fishing or whatever. But other than that, like we generally don't have too bad of an issue with phones at our school.
But why is it just that class is boring? I mean, is it just not engaging enough in the ways that would hold your attention? Or are smartphones just that addictive? I mean, what is it that lets the mind wander? Is class just boring?
Sometimes though, like class does get boring, but. Or if we're done with our work early, or if our lesson gets done early, then we just kind of do whatever we do.
Miracle, what about you? No. Do you think there's any truth to this stereotype about the teenager who never looks up from their phone? I mean, does that sound like you?
No, actually, it doesn't. I'm a very busy person, and in school, we can't even have our phones out. If you get caught with your phone, you get a detention, and you get it taken away, and your parent has to come pick it up. But other than that, I would say anybody that goes to my school barely has their phone. We always have work every night, and we just have so much to do. I know I have so much to do. My weekends are even booked. So, like, maybe I'll be on my phone 2 to 3 hours a day, but it's not, like, constantly. I don't actually need it. I don't need it to survive. It's just there for, like, important calls or important emails or just texts from my friends.
Michael, before we have to pause, Jill wants to know, as a parent, how can I best support and educate my kids to safely navigate social media? What should parents be doing, if anything, to help their kids navigate social media? Or do your peers tend to kind of know what they're doing online?
I mean, I feel like young people know better than their parents what to be doing online. Of course, there's the whole issue of staying away from bad content. And I feel like parents should be involved to some extent with their kids just to make sure they know right from wrong, but not to the point where it's extreme and controlling.
One of the big issues that comes up with social media is bullying. And we'll talk about bullying in just a moment as we continue with Michael Solomon of Springbrook High, Miracle Burris of Gary Comer College Prep, and Dana Youngberg of Newell High School in Newell, South Dakota. Also, Kelly asks, people often ask high schoolers, how's school? A teen friend of mine asked, why do all adults ask that? What do high schoolers wish we would ask to get to know them? We'll get to that. And now to Michael's music choice, Accordion by MF Doom, in just a moment. Stay close.
living off borrowed time, the clock tick faster. That'll be the hour they knock the slick blaster. Dick Dastardly and Muttley with sick laughter. A gunfight and they come to cut the mix master. ICE Cole, nice to be old. Y2G Steve twice to threefold.
Our education series, Enrolled, continues tomorrow, but we'd love your help with another topic we'll also discuss tomorrow, non-disclosure agreements. Former Trump White House aide Omarosa Manigault Newman says she was asked to sign a non-disclosure agreement, or NDA, by the Trump campaign after she was fired. The idea was to pay her from the campaign's coffers to keep her from talking about her time in the administration. Manigault says she refused, but Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway confirmed that staffers inside the White House have been asked to sign NDAs. We'd love to know your experiences with these agreements. Have you ever signed one or asked someone to sign one? How'd you feel about that? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. We also welcome your thoughts on the NDAs inside the Trump White House. Does it seem a little too secretive or does it make sense? Tell us your story, 855-236-1A1A. You can also use our new app, 1A Vox Pop, to send us a radio quality audio file, and we will share some of your stories tomorrow on 1A. Back now to our conversation with Dana Youngberg, Miracle Burris, and Michael Solomon. Katie emailed, I wish adults knew that students have such a high level of stress these days. I'm going to be a senior, and it feels so overwhelming with social media and new technology. I just wish adults understood that more. Jacques emailed, we homeschool our kids, and while they are not at the high school level age-wise, they're already working on high school level material academically. They have very relaxed schedules and time for music lessons and sports. The fact that students believe that they need to subject themselves to these stressful schedules in order to prepare themselves for a life of stress is sad. And Jamie tweeted, so cool that Miracle and Dana are interested in science. You go. Let's back up and talk about bullying. We got quite a few questions and comments about bullying in school. Emily from Cincinnati left us this message through our app 1A Vox Pop.
Not only are kids dealing with the bullying at school, but they're also dealing with it at home. They're dealing with it on their Facebooks. They're dealing with it on their Twitter, their Instagram, their Snapchat. And, you know, it's in the palm of their hands. And people can hide behind that screen and bully others, which isn't right. And it can be really detrimental to their health.
Yeah, Emily, thanks very much for sharing that with us. Dana, how are you seeing bullying at school, online or in person? How does that kind of present itself and how is it dealt with?
Well, honestly, like coming from a small school of 300 in like K through 12, everybody knows everybody. So you know like their family story, you know everything about them. So it's really hard to find like decent friends and whatnot. So I think we constantly fight the bullying at our school just because, like, you just know too much about everybody. And they always use it against you in some instances. Like, if you beat them at something, or it's always out of spite or jealousy. And I guess the only way that you can really deal with it is just ignore them or tell them to believe whatever they're going to believe. Like, it's not helping any situation.
Yeah, just kind of leave them to do whatever it is they're going to do.
Exactly, yeah. And there's really nothing, I mean, if they take it too far, like, someone will step in. Like, it's always good to tell an adult, too. I go to my parents a lot for advice and whatnot, and they just say, you know, just keep doing you, mind your own business, like, just stay away from them, just do you, I guess.
Miracle, how do you see bullying play out at your school, and how's it dealt with?
I actually see bullying quite a lot, which is not a very good thing. But we just try to keep it at a minimum. I would talk to my social worker all the time about what's going on around the school, and she'll reach out to our teachers and our staff members, and they'll try to dissolve the situation. And sometimes it gets to that point where people get violent, but we try to decrease that as much as possible. Online, as far as that goes, I wouldn't say that's a problem just because we can't have our phones. And also, like, this day and age, people are bold enough to come to your face and tell you how they feel. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's what escalates the situation even more, is that people feel like they have to say whatever they have to say at the moment instead of talking it out with that person. So, yeah.
Michael, I wonder if you could take on a question from Howard, who writes, back in the 70s, I was bullied in high school for being gay. I'm wondering how LGBTQ students are treated these days. Are they accepted? Would you stand up for an LGBTQ student if you saw them being bullied? Michael?
I would definitely say that especially where I live in Montgomery County, which is a really liberal area, the LGBT community is being, there's a widespread acceptance for people with different sexual orientations. And especially even within high schools, you know, sometimes kids can be insensitive. But one of the things that we've seen, or that I've seen in Montgomery County in my school, is, yeah, there's people who make jokes, but homophobia, racism, sexism, those are where you kind of cross the line to the point where you would be the target of other people looking at you differently if you're the type of person who expresses hate for other groups. It's not something that's accepted within my school.
Yeah, Miracle, I know you said that there are quite a few LGBTQ educators at your school. Dana, your community is a bit more conservative. How do you see this? I mean, what would you say to Howard's question in terms of how LGBTQ students are treated?
I mean, they're definitely looked at different at my school, but we don't say anything to them like that would hurt them or just bully them. I mean, we treat them as we do anybody else. Don't treat them any different. Like I said, just being respectful to them, and you're entitled to your own beliefs. Like, we don't have to agree with you, but we're not gonna call you out on it either.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten a lot of questions from parents and teachers about high schoolers. We also got one from a student who is about to head to where you are. Listen.
Hi, I'm Iris, and I'm calling from Columbia, Maryland, and I'm a 14-year-old about to be a freshman in high school. And my eighth grade experience was supposed to be like my preparation for high school, and I hated eighth grade, so I'm kind of skeptical about my high school experience in the fall, you know, even though I've heard great things about high school. But it also seems very stressful because of all the college stuff and academic pressure and the social pressure, and it seems really hard to stay mentally stable. So I think that teachers and counselors should really help out students to make sure that they're okay, and to help them navigate through high school so they don't feel awkward, lonely, and weird, and just to help out students to make sure that their high school experience is better.
Iris, thank you so much for calling. We really, really appreciate your story. And I wonder, Michael, let me start with you on this one. I was just talking to my friends about this like last night. There was three of us, and one of us was like, oh, high school was great. It was easy. I had a great time, had lots of friends. And the other two of us were like, what alternate dimension did you go to high school? High school was terrible. We were working like crazy. Didn't have very awkward, lonely, and weird resonated for the two of us. And the other one was like, oh, it's great. It's part. I had a great time. What would you say to Iris about eighth grade versus high school? What should she be prepared for?
It's definitely a really big transition. Especially for me, I came from a private school, a smaller private school, going into a larger public school with over 2,000 kids. It was really a big transition for me. But I guess my advice would be, early on, make sure that you set yourself up to the point where you're comfortable with your grades so that you don't have to, so that you still have options by the time you get to senior year, if you want to go to college or if you want to go straight into employment. Just make sure, when it comes to at least academics, just make sure you're there, your sound and your transcript is good enough for you to have a good amount of options.
It kind of sounds, Michael, like part of what you're saying is going to high school with a plan. Don't just go sideways in high
school. Because a lot of people will go into freshman and sophomore year kind of just like goofing off, not really paying attention, not really doing their work. And I feel it's definitely because they don't really always understand the importance of preparing yourself for life after high school. So a lot of people will wake up junior or senior year and be like, oh, I want to go to college, but I don't have the grades for college. And at that point, their grades are not good enough for them, or they're past the point of repair where you can get yourself ready for college.
Miracle, I wonder if you could take on this question from Allison, who writes, "My high school days were very unhappy. Would you say that you have many happy experiences in the classroom and in the halls of your school?" Miracle?
Yes, I would say I'm very happy throughout the day. I love my friends. They're like a family to me. And I love my school. They're also like a family to me. And we all get along. We all can conversate. We all can just come upon agreeing on anything. So it's not a bad experience, I would say. Sometimes, yes, there are rough patches where I feel like the academics are getting very challenging. But other than that, I keep pushing throughout my day. I ask for help. I advocate for myself so that I can make my high school experience great. So I don't try to let anything get in my way or let anything stop me. Like I said, I talk to my social worker all the time. So I try to make sure I'm on the track and I'm healthy and my head is on straight.
Yeah, it's a good miracle that you have someone to go to for help. Dana, I wonder what you see as the support structure for students where you are. Marianne Ware asked, "A current trend is to add more mental health professionals to district staff. Will students seek counseling if available? Why or why not?" Dana?
I guess around here, I don't think many people at my school would. A lot of times, I actually think that the teachers should go through a training because I find more and more students go to certain teachers that they're comfortable with and will have a live chat with them in their free time. Our teachers are super open to just about anything. Like if you need to get something off your chest or just talk to them about like your home life or something. Our teachers most of the time serve as like our counselors. Definitely great people to go to.
Yeah, and Dana, you talked about how your parents are also a source for support. We heard from a number of parents, I know we're winding down, but we heard from a number of parents who want to know how they can be better at supporting their high schoolers. Christine writes, "Why won't you talk to me? What's going on in your head at school with your peers and friends?" Asking as a parent to a rising freshman. We also got some calls from listeners, including this one from the Southwest.
April from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm wondering, as a parent, what do high school kids need from their parents? What kind of support do they need socially from bullying or peer pressure or any of the emotional challenges that they go through in high school? I know that that's a complicated age. So just what can parents do to support their kids without seeming overbearing or, you know, nosy? I know a lot of high school kids do not want their parents prying too much. So where is that balance?
April, thanks for that question. I'd love to hear from all three of you as we're winding down. What do high school kids need from their parents? And where is that line between being obnoxious and being actually helpful? Michael?
I'd say high schoolers definitely need support from their parents in different areas. Sometimes it could just be as little as, you know, just getting transportation to and from places. But also when it comes to things like bullying or just day-to-day lives, we do definitely need to know that our parents are there for us, that we can talk to them. But one thing that we also really need is space. So I think for me especially, I like to know that my parents are there, that I can go to them whenever I need to. But I also need my space in order just for me to keep my head on straight, just to be able to deal with what I need to deal with and know what I can do alone and know what I can't do alone.
Miracle?
I would say, well, for me, it's more like I'm uncomfortable talking to my mom about anything. I feel like I'm more comfortable talking to strangers about my problems than I am with my mom. Maybe it's because I don't know them and she knows me better and she could figure me out. So I would say I wasn't fond of doing this when I was younger, but I feel like parents should have that talk with their child going into high school and never have that talk again. Just have a simple talk about anything, everything that you want to tell your child before they go out into high school. And just what me and my mom came upon was just writing each other letters, because I just can't find myself talking to her. So I'll write her a letter and I'll tell her how I'm feeling. Or maybe when we're in the car, we're moving, she's not paying attention as much. I would like just tell her something, and then she'd be like, oh, okay. And it's just a way for me getting stuff off my chest without actually having to look her in the face.
You know, I have to say that makes sense. Like, I talk for a living, and I've had people that I needed to have a conversation with, and I was like, let me just write you a letter. Because you can compose your thoughts, you can edit. Like, if it doesn't come out right, you just delete it. You can change your mind about saying it altogether. Like, that doesn't make sense. Dana, what would you say? What do high school kids need from their parents?
Honestly, just like constant support, like support them in everything that they do. And, you know, I guess I find it really easy going to my parents and just like, hey, you know, I'm doing this. Like, I constantly want to be a better person. So if you can figure out like what their like interests are or like what their goals are, I'm a very goal oriented person. So, just talking to my parents and like telling them my goals, or if they see something that I need to work on, they say, hey, you know, you should try something different. Like, just throw suggestions out at them.
Right.
That's helped me out a lot.
One last comment before we have to go, and Michael, I'd like you to respond to this. Lynn writes, having taught in D.C. public schools and a Virginia Catholic school, I believe the next generation can solve or greatly mitigate the problems of the 21st century. Their generosity and an authentic tolerance leave me most optimistic. I have missed them every day of my retirement. Before we go, Michael, how optimistic are you and your classmates about your future?
We're extremely optimistic about the future, but we're also cautious because it's really easy to become complacent. And I think we've seen that during the Obama administration, not many people, at least on my side of things, were too worried about the state of our country, the state of our future. And that complacency led to low voter turnout, which led to an administration that a lot of people are now worried about. And I feel like everybody's kind of been woken out of their slumber and recognizing that, hey, we need to stay engaged, stay involved. So I think that a lot of people are very optimistic about the future, but we have to make sure that we continue to stay engaged.
Michael Solomon, a rising junior at Springbrook High School in Montgomery County, Maryland. Michael, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Miracle Burris, a rising junior at Gary Comer College Prep in Chicago. Thanks, Miracle.
Thanks for having me.
And Dana Youngberg, a rising senior at Newell High School in Newell, South Dakota. Thank you, Dana.
Thank you much.
Last music choice. This one's from Miracle. It's I Like That by Janelle Monae. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. I liked all your questions and comments, and we like that you listen. Thanks very much. This is 1A.
Remember when you called me weird? We was in math class, third row. I was sitting by you. Right before Mr. Ammon's class. Cause my mama couldn't afford new Jace Polo, thrift store, thrift clothes. That was all I knew. Do you remember? I remember when you laughed when I cut my...